You're listening to the Miles to Go podcast, the go-to source for travel tips, news, and reviews you can't afford to miss. Now, here's your host, travel expert Ed Pizza.
Welcome back to another episode of the Miles to Go podcast, where we bring you the latest travel news, tips, and tricks each week to help you save money and travel better. You still have a few more days to enter our $100 Amazon gift card drawing. You'll need to snag a copy of the July issue of Alaska Beyond magazine from an Alaska Airlines flight and grab a selfie of yourself with the article where our podcast Miles to Go is featured as one of their favorite family travel podcasts. You can read all about it on my blog, where you can find me writing each and every day at pizzainmotion.com. If you have any questions or suggestions for a future episode, you can shoot me an email, ed@pizzainmotion.com, or you can find me on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all at pizzainmotion. And if you're enjoying the show, please tell a friend. We love growing the audience. Word of mouth is the best way to do that. Up this week, we've got Kim back from the Stuffed Suitcase on the show. She also has her own great travel podcast called Vacation Mavens. Kim is joining us to talk about cruising for beginners. Cruising represents the perfect compromise for my wife and I when we travel. When we're on vacation, she really likes to get where we're going and unpack somewhere, staying in one place until we head home. On the other hand, I want to see all the things. When we board a cruise, she gets to unpack and I get to visit a bunch of different ports, so it really works out well for us. When we first started cruising, food and beverage was the biggest weak spot that I saw. There have really been vast improvements on some cruise lines when it comes to food quality, specifically Royal Caribbean and Disney cruises. It's really now possible to get a pretty darn good meal just about every night. Whether there will be a deck chair available when you make your way to the pool, that's an entirely separate discussion. I really think you're going to enjoy this segment with Kim. I won't hold this up any longer. Let's talk with Kim from the Stuffed Suitcase about what to expect on your first cruise. Back on the Miles to Go podcast, and back when my wife and I first got married, we were heavy cruisers, and then we sort of backed away from it while we had our first child. Cruised a little bit after the first one, and now after two kids and they're older, we've gotten back into cruising, and we're really excited about it. So I want to make sure that I'm covering enough of that content for folks who are interested in cruising. And there are a few folks out there who are what I would consider to be cruise experts, and we've got one of them on today, Kim from Stuffed Suitcase. She also has the Vacation Mavens podcast. She's like hardcore cruiser, and she's been on the show before, but we wanted to put together a segment for folks who are just getting started. I got a bunch of questions when I put some cruise content out, and folks were like, hey, we haven't cruised with our kids yet. Where should we start? And it's like, wow, what a big box to unpack, right, Kim?
Yeah, just a little bit. There's a lot of options out there these days.
Oh my gosh, there's so much to cover. And just a quick note too, if you're a reader, Kim has a great book on her site called Wanderlust that you should definitely take a look at, and a bunch of guides on cruising. But if you're just sitting there trying to figure out which direction to go, I thought it'd be great to start off with, grabbing Kim for, 10 or 15 minutes and just say, hey, we're completely lost. We're brand new. What's a family to do if they want to cruise, but they're not really sure where to get started?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the biggest thing to decide when you're first starting out is what your priority is. The big thing I think for families is that often you'll choose based on ports of call when you should probably choose based on the ship. And I don't know if you guys have experienced that, but as our girls especially have gotten older into, the older elementary ages and into tweens and teens, the ship is really kind of what makes the vacation for them. And the ports of call, we can kind of hit a beach or do something fun no matter where we're stopping. So I would say that would be the first thing, would be to figure out what ship you want to be on. And finding the right cruise line is another tricky one. You've got to decide. There's a few big ones that stand out to me. Of course, Disney Cruise Line, people are drawn to that. If you're Disney, fanatics and really like it, or if your kids are really into the Disney thing and you like that cast member service and that kind of over-the-top experience, you're going to be with, couple thousand of your closest, your kids are going to find best friends, you know? So it's definitely like a family ship. So that's one option. Then you've got, of course, we've recently been on celebrity cruises a little bit, and I have been really impressed. And it's like the flip side, I would say, of Disney, where it's not quite as like the ships aren't tailored for kids. But if you have a kid who knows how to entertain themselves, enjoys some good food, knows how to relax and kind of entertain themselves, and then likes a tween or a teen club or even the kids club, I would say that celebrity is great. It's definitely more mellow. You're going to have less kids there. But because of that, I feel like the kids clubs, the cast, or I guess not cast members because it's not Disney, but the staff members there are definitely super involved. And then we've also loved Norwegian Cruise Line, especially when the kids were a little younger, because they have the freestyle dining where you can choose your dining time each day. And that is so nice when you have a family. You can kind of really decide, this is what time we're going to eat. We're not going to go to this show, or this is what time we're in port. So we're going to choose to have an early dinner or a late dinner. So that was another big benefit there. And then, of course, Royal Caribbean, we have not been on it lately, and we haven't been on it with our kids. I had the opportunity recently, but there was a conflict on my schedule. And that's one I really want to check out. I know a lot of families who like that. And those are definitely the over the top ships that really, you know, kind of throw it all and keep you, your kids, they're going to definitely be entertained on board.
Yeah, I say we have a lot of the same experiences. I haven't cruised Norwegian. Well, I did cruise it, but many, many years ago. And I think, you know, Disney's an easy target for folks that are family oriented. But I do think Royal holds their own against them. And I think, as you said, it really have to decide what ship you want to be on, and go from there. Because we're finding, you know, there certainly are ports we don't get off the ship on because there are things we want to do on board. And, you know, I mean, there's, when you think about what you're going to pay for a price premium, I think if you really are interested in the ports, then, you know, maybe a Norwegian is more appropriate for you than a Disney, in that the price for that Norwegian cruise is likely to be less than a Disney cruise. If you're spending time off the ship, if your goal is, you know, hey, you want to have pictures with Mickey and Minnie, and you want Star Wars figures in the kids club and all that, I find, you know, when we did Disney cruise, we actually wanted to stay on the ship more to get more value for that sort of stuff.
Absolutely. And I think one of the big things that Disney does really well, and now Royal Caribbean are, and I know Norwegian has it as well, more and more companies have that. And I'm forgetting, we haven't even mentioned Carnival, which is a great budget entry if you're really watching your dollars and you want to just have an experience. Carnival has really done some amazing things as well. So all of those have options, but they have private islands now. And I think that was one of the things when we went to Castaway Cay, or Castaway K, however you want to say it, with Disney. I want to say K, but I know a lot of people say Key. So I think that's, you know, I know Royal Caribbean just launched their really brand new renovated Perfect Day at Coco Cay. And it's amazing. Those private islands really, you know, it's kind of like getting the ship experience, but you're on the island, but everything's included that you have on the ship. You know, so you can go to the buffet and you can do that. You can do all the you know, a lot of the excursions, a few have extra fees, but so that's, I think those private islands are another thing to really look for. If you like those ships and you have kids, I think the private islands are a big draw.
I think there's enough variety too in what those islands offer now, that, as you said, just like on board the ship, if you've got one child that's, you know, like we have an 8-year-old and now a 13-year-old, and they definitely want to do different things at certain times.
Yeah.
And as you say, the islands have really geared up that they can go in different directions and not completely be bored.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I think that's the big thing. Figure out the company and the ship that works for you, and the ports of call are probably kind of secondary.
Yeah, we never used to think that way.
I know.
All right. So if you're past this point and you've figured out what cruise line you think you want to cruise, you know, what do you think is next?
I think the next thing would be that to not get fooled that all cruises are kind of just set it and forget it all inclusive these days. There's a lot of cruises that are kind of allowing you to make the vacation you want. So there might be some pre-planning that you need to consider. For example, on Norwegian, you know, you can sometimes book your dining reservations in advance. So you need to be ready to know, are you 90 days out, 60 days out, 30 days out? What's your deadline for booking your reservation so that you know, like, you get the prime restaurant of your choice at the right dining time of your choice? They have a, you know, the race car track on ship. So when you board, you need to be prepared to hurry and go book your ride time for that. So there's a few things that you need to be aware of that require extra booking, and make sure that you are planning in advance to make those things happen if they matter. Because I think a lot of people think that cruising means I pay my fee, I show up, I get on the ship. And these days, a lot of the newer, you know, cruise lines and a lot of the cruise lines are encouraging you to take more, you know, I guess, responsibility in planning the vacation of your choice. There's definitely, you know, nothing to be said. You can definitely get on the ship and just show up at your pre-confirmed dining time at your pre-confirmed restaurant, and that's allowed. But that might not be the perfect vacation for everyone.
When we first started cruising Royal, many of the excursions had no, you know, theoretical limit how many people they could take. There was probably some limit, of, if you will, but the excursions didn't fill up and you could book most of them on board the ship. I've heard that that's changed. And on Disney, given I didn't really want to budget, I think it was like $600 for a cabana on Castaway Cay for the day.
Yeah.
Definitely not something that was like first and foremost on our agenda. But what I've heard is, because there's only, and I'm probably gonna get the number wrong, but because there's only like, you know, 12 or 20 of those on the island,
right,
it really is Hunger Games style if you want one of those to make sure that you're in there first to grab one. And so yes, the planning has to be an element nowadays, so you're not, if that was the one thing you wanted, that you're not disappointed.
Absolutely. And I think that you bring up a good thing also about the excursions and booking those and considering those. I think for most first-time cruisers, I would absolutely recommend booking your excursions budget and book them through the ship. As you become a more experienced cruiser, there are the opportunities of getting off the ship, and there's tons of people standing with their flyers ready to take you on an excursion that's almost the same as the cruise ship. But it's good to know that when you book through the cruise ship, you often join your team on the ship and walk off and out of port with them. You also are guaranteed a return time before the ship leaves. You're guaranteed returning. And if you're not there or something happens, they'll actually hold the ship or, you know, wait for you. So by booking through the cruise, that's another thing to know, is that you have a little bit of insurance and convenience that if you're a first-time cruiser, I think that's probably going to be the way you want to go.
I tend to agree. We've done some excursions where we've booked them outside of the cruise line. And I think depending on what it was I was doing, I would certainly consider it, because I think some of the things that are a bit more adventurous can also have the biggest price hikes from, say, just booking locally.
Yes.
You can, with the internet, you can book some of this stuff ahead of time. You can find folks who offer those excursions and book stuff ahead of time. In fact, we had a recent segment on the podcast about Airbnb experiences in certain cities, where some of those are also ports of call for cruises. So you could, in theory, book a hike through an experience site like that and just let them know that you're going to be getting off of a cruise ship. But you know, Kim, I think you bring up a great point too, that if you're not experienced with this sort of thing, especially if maybe it's a port you've never been to and don't understand how far away from the ship you might be at certain times. I've never seen the back end of a cruise ship as it pulls out of port, and I'd like to keep it that way. So I think it's a really important point. You know, saving a few bucks. You want to make sure you have a good plan before you do that.
Absolutely. Yeah, we have not had that as well, and I have no desire to have that, because it's your responsibility then to pay for your own way. And a lot of times I hear horror stories about people leave money and valuables and everything on that cruise ship, so they even have that, you know, trouble. So
yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Definitely something to consider.
I wouldn't want to necessarily go down that road either, because the transportation from island to island is not going to be cheap in most of them, and probably not worth what you'd save on most excursions.
Correct.
But again, you know, each to their own flavor. I think, as Kim said, you want to be an experienced cruiser if you're going to go down that road. And for folks that are just starting out, let's hit on a couple of either packing tips or prep tips when they're leading up to the cruise that can help make sure that they're not running any pitfalls once they're on board.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things for people to know when they're getting on board is that not all cruise lines allow you to get straight into your cabin if you're one of the first people that boards. So you want to be sure that you carry, like, if you're going to have a piece of luggage that's bigger, that has all your clothes in it, and however you, I'm team carry-on, so it's not really an issue for me, but people who pack a little heavier, you're going to have to hand over that suitcase when you arrive at the port, and you're not going to see it for a few hours, likely. you know, possibly. So you want to make sure that you have a carry-on bag that's easy to carry as you go up and down steps. The elevators, when you get on a cruise ship, when everybody's coming on board the first time, are normally massively packed. So you ideally want something that you can carry up 5 flights of stairs, 6 flights of stairs, if necessary, if you're willing to do that, as opposed to waiting in the long line for the elevators. So you just want to make sure that when you're coming on board, you kind of packed, you know, a swimsuit maybe, or anything that you need to change into. If maybe you traveled from a cold winter climate and now all of a sudden it's hot and you're going to go hang out on the pool deck, or you're going to, you know, relax and say goodbye and wave, you know, from one of the decks, whatever you're going to do, just make sure you have some stuff on board that you can keep handy, because they will take your main suitcase from you. Now, being team carry-on, I just roll my suitcase and then I carry it up the flights of stairs if I need to, because it's a carry-on size. But not everyone can accomplish that for a cruise, because there are definitely specialty nights and formal dining and then all the excursions. So packing can be a little tricky.
It really can be. And, you know, when my wife and I first started traveling, she used to bring a lot more on cruise ships than she does now.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, there are a lot of things that she'll leave behind, and we've gotten much closer to team carry-on. I would say that, you know, for the longer cruises, the one strategy that we've employed is bringing on a bag that has, you know, call it an outfit for everyone, including a dinner outfit and bathing suits and all that stuff. And if we have to leave bags behind, at least there's enough stuff in one or two carry-ons to get us through till late that evening.
Yeah.
And while I've never had bags come after dinner, I have heard horror stories of folks who didn't get their bags till, you know, 9 or 10 o'clock at night. And
wow,
we've tried to avoid that where we can. I also think it's important to know that, you know, as Kim says, the crush of humanity around elevators is real. and so it's important to know what that looks like when you're getting on board a ship. And if you don't do stairs well, then you probably do want to leave all your bags, or as many bags as you can, behind. Because we did haul our bags for a few hours when we got on our most recent cruise, which was a Disney cruise.
Yeah, you can have to manage it for a while. I mean, you're waiting in one line to queue, and then you've got to go up and down those, you know, they're like zigzag jetways. Imagine a really, really long plane jetway. So it's definitely something to keep in mind. And I also wanted to give a quick tip also with, this is not totally packing, but make sure when you're planning your trip to arrive at the cruise port that you don't necessarily want to book a flight that is going to arrive right near your boarding time. If there's a delay, you are then responsible for getting to that ship if you miss the onboarding. So that's why you'll see a lot of people, especially West Coasters, which I am, we a lot of times have to come in the night before, and then we have to book an overnight, because we want to make sure we don't miss that, you know, boarding time window, which normally is typically, I would say, like noon to 3 or 4 is the typical boarding window I've seen.
I would say as Mr. Nervous Traveler isn't the right way to frame it, but I'm always there early. And so for me, even being an East Coaster, we will almost always fly down the night before and just find something to do that day. We won't always be the first people on the ship unless it's a really short cruise. Like it was a 3-day cruise or a 3-night cruise, and we want that first day on board because it's like, you know, 20% of what we paid for.
Yeah.
But, you know, the interesting thing that we found too is that, you know, there's usually something to do in wherever we're going that maybe we hadn't considered if we get down there the night before. And so we'll do something for a couple hours, whether that's, you know, if we leave from Port Canaveral, maybe we're going over and seeing some of the rockets and space shuttles beforehand. I mean, there's things you can do if you get there the night before. And gosh, yeah, again, not wanting to see the ship pull out and have to figure out how to get there to the next destination, I would strongly agree with Kim on get there the night before if you can.
Yeah, I think those are some of the top tips for at least getting started. Once you're on the cruise ship, that's a whole nother thing, but we've only got 15 minutes, right?
We do for this one, but I do want to have you back to talk more. And as I mentioned at the top of the segment, Kim has just tons and tons of resources on her blog, stuffedsuitcase.com. So definitely make sure you check that out. She's also always willing to answer questions, just like I am. So you can track her down on all those social media places. Kim, tell folks where they can track you down.
Yeah, definitely. As you said, my blog, stuffedsuitcase.com. I have a great post on there about what to pack for your cruise, the extras that you need to add. So we'll be sure to link to that. And if you are a podcast listener, check us out at Vacation Mavens. We interview some family travel people about destinations that are great for kids. So if you need some inspiration, that's a great place to start. And then lastly, you can find me online at all my socials at Stuffed Suitcase. Instagram is probably my biggest platform. So if you want to, if you like Instagram, check me out over there.
Awesome. Kim, thanks a bunch for being on. And I can say I definitely found Kim first on her podcast, having become a podcast listener over the last few years. It's definitely one of the ones, if you're into family travel, that you should add to your list. And we will include links to all that stuff in the show notes. Safe travels, Kim. We'll have you back on again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks.
We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. This week's show is brought to you in part by AutoSlash. AutoSlash does one thing really, really well. They save you money on car rentals, and not just a little bit. They're always free to use, and there's two separate ways that they can help save you money. First off, if you start your booking process at AutoSlash.com, you'll enter in some key information, Costco membership, AAA, frequent flyer memberships, and they'll take all that information along with searching for any publicly available codes that you might not be aware of, and they'll find the best price for your specific car rental, which you can then go ahead and book. After you've booked, you can enter your car rental reservation into their tracking tool, and it will continue to track whether the price has gone down on your car rental or a new code becomes available that would save you more money. They'll notify you, and you'll be given the chance to rebook that reservation for less money. Even if you don't start the booking process with AutoSlash.com, if you booked it somewhere else, you could take your reservation number, key it into AutoSlash, and they will continue to track that reservation for free and let you know if the price goes down or if there's a discount code maybe you didn't know about, right up until you pick the car up. Tons of different ways to save money with AutoSlash. It's 100% free, always 100% free. Give it a try and drop me an email. Let me know what you think about it. You can find them at AutoSlash.com. Back to wrap up this week's show with the final two pennies and a listener question. Thanks to Nana for writing in with some questions about what's in her wallet. She was listening, and I told you guys last week that you need to make sure that you peek inside that wallet periodically and make sure the credit cards that you're spending on still meet your goals. Set a reminder for every 6 months or a year to make sure you're earning the right points for your spending and travel patterns. After all, things do change in the world of miles and points, and your goals will change from time to time on where you actually want to go. At any rate, Nana had a bunch of questions, one of which was about 524. She wasn't sure what the term meant, and if you're someone with one or two credit cards, you've probably never heard of 524, and you likely won't be impacted by it. But just in case, let's go over it. This is a Chase Bank rule only, though there are other rules that the other major credit card issuers have. And these are unpublished rules largely for the most part. Chase issues lucrative travel rewards cards such as the Chase Sapphire family and the Inc. family of cards, as well as co-branded cards for other popular travel brands such as United Airlines and Hyatt Hotels. 524 is an indication that Chase will automatically decline any new credit card applications, regardless of your credit score, if you've opened 5 new credit card accounts in the past 24 months. That's where the 524 comes from. These 5 cards can be from any bank, not just Chase. That means, let's say, if you applied for 2 American Express cards and then went and applied for 3 Chase cards in the past 2 years, you wouldn't be able to apply for any more cards until 24 months after that first card you applied for. Well, technically 25 months, so it's the 1 month after your 24th month, if you will. That doesn't mean that you can't apply for more than 5 cards in 2 years. It just means that you'll want to start with the Chase cards you want to apply for first, and then switch to applying for cards maybe from American Express or Citi or Wells Fargo or whoever. As a general rule, most folks won't apply for more than 5 cards over the course of two years. 2 or 3 credit cards, in my opinion, is generally good enough to have an efficient strategy for earning miles and points that fit the sort of travel you envision. Some people get overwhelmed if they have more than that, and maybe they don't do anything right. It's hard to keep track of them all. I have, a lot more than 2 or 3 cards, and sometimes I even lose track of what's the best card to spend on. So make sure you're just applying for and using the cards that make the most sense for your personal strategy. Nan, I hope that explains 524 for you. We love answering questions on Miles to Go. If you have a question that you'd like us to answer, you can email me, ed@pizzainmotion.com, or you can track me down on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all at Pizza in Motion. That's a full wrap on this week's show. Wanted to take another moment to thank Auto Slash for helping sponsor the show and bring this to you guys each and every week. A big thanks to Kim for helping first-time cruisers figure out the best way to get started. And as always, thanks to producer Mike. We've still got firsthand breakdowns of top-tier elite status from American, Delta, and United Road Warriors, along with a great way to organize your credit cards coming up in a future show. If you've listened this far, I have to believe that you like what you're hearing. And if that's the case, please tell a friend and make sure you subscribe to get our episodes downloaded each and every week as soon as they're released. Until we upload again, we've got miles to go.